Hello, this is Tom Scott with the Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday, January 21st, 2026. Before we begin our reading, I must apologize for my voice this morning. I'm in the process of battling a cold, so we'll carry on and do what we can. We begin on the front page, big headlines from the Paxton Buckley School Board. When it comes to adding wrestling as a school-sponsored sport at PBL, Coach says, the time is now. Coach of Youth Wrestling Club seeks to launch wrestling program at PBL Junior High. Paxton. When talking about wrestling, Matt Greenberg exudes energy, enthusiasm, and passion. It shines through not just in his social media videos promoting the Panther Paw Youth Wrestling Club that he founded with his wife, Christy. Those videos with a fired-up Greenberg shouting, "Let's go!" but at school board meetings, too. Such was the case during the Paxton Buckley Lota School Board's monthly meeting on Wednesday, January 14th, when Greenberg asked the board to consider his proposal to establish a junior high wrestling program run by a team of parent volunteer coaches led by himself, and perhaps eventually a high school program as well. Last April, Greenberg had requested, to no avail, a relaunch of the high school programs only. If I had a magic wand, we'd do it all, Greenberg said, because we have kids in high school right now who want a wrestling program. I would love to have junior and high school go at the same time, but really I thought, that's just too much of an ask. So I showed up here just to ask for junior high wrestling next fall, and then if we could get our foot in the door and show how special this really is, we could have a high school program added the next year. I hope this builds a strong foundation for the continuation of a conversation. My ask is that I'd be able to formally sit down with PBL Junior High School Principal Josh Didier and PBL Junior High Athletic Director Lindsay Allred to sit down with our superintendent to see what we can do to make this happen. Greenberg noted that his youth wrestling club, with 70-plus members and a team of more than a dozen volunteer parent coaches, has already laid the foundation for there to be a successful program at PBL Junior High School. With these numbers, we've already established strong community support, Greenberg said. I truly believe that the time is now to start this junior high program. You'll see some of our club's members and the age breakdowns, and they're coming up. But also, if this was here and they didn't have to travel 5 miles to Ludlow Grade School's gymnasium to practice, and it was free for the kids enrolled at PBL, how many more kids would we have wrestling at the junior high, especially with some pretty fired-up coaches involved with that? I'm sure we could get some huge numbers. If a junior high wrestling program were to be launched, Greenberg said, he would expect to continue to run the Panther Paw Club with his wife while overseeing the junior high program too. My wife and I, that's our passion project right there, is Panther Paw, Greenberg said. We'd be a feeder program for the junior high school program. Greenberg noted the quality of training the club offers, even in our off-season. That included the clubs arranging for Cannon Webster, a highly ranked sophomore wrestler at the University of Illinois, to help run some of our practices in recent months. I'm trying to establish here that this is quality, what we're doing, Greenberg told the board. The proposed junior high program would be for boys and girls. My daughter Emma, she went to state last year as one of an estimated 15 female Panther Paw wrestlers, Greenberg noted. Many different types of kids can plug into a spot on the team, so it's inclusive. Wrestlers can be every shape and size. Greenberg suggested starting a junior high program next fall, then eventually relaunching the wrestling program at PBL High School, which has been without one since 2018. However, Interim Superintendent John Kilgore questioned whether the absence of a high school program would cause hesitancy among junior high school students to pick up wrestling as a sport, knowing there would be no path to continue wrestling at PBL beyond eighth grade. Definitely, Greenberg replied. I get some of that right now. I have one individual who's thinking about going to another school district because that's his sport. I'm not saying that everyone's going to leave PBL, because that's not true. But we would have to solve that problem really quickly. We would have to have a high school program established. I would push for that. Kilgore wondered whether starting a high school program first might be a better option, since there already is a youth wrestling club around. In response, though, Greenberg said it might not. If you were doing it as a minimalist approach, yes, we would be the feeding program, Panther Paw, and then we'd have a high school program, Greenberg said. Long-term success would be club, junior high, high school, if you want to be elite there. After Greenberg's presentation, the board's president, Don Bachtold, asked the junior high school's athletic director to coordinate with the high school athletic director, Bruce Wachowski, about surveying both junior high and high school students about whether they would be interested in a wrestling program at their schools. Survey results will be considered when deciding which path to take forward. Let's try to get the kids surveyed next week, Bachtold said, so that we can get numbers and then get them out to John Kilgore to be given to the board. Bachtold also asked the junior high's principal, Didier, to coordinate with administrators of the district's three schools to determine if there would be any available space at the district's facilities for the storage of the necessary equipment for a wrestling team, including wrestling mats. What we did last time was not the best plan, Bachtold said, regarding the improper storage of equipment for the previous high school wrestling program. Greenberg said he does not intend to repeat the past. There's different leadership in place, but there's 70-plus kids who are in our feeder program, Greenberg said. That feeder program was not in place when there was wrestling at the high school. So we have the demand, and we have parents who can get behind this as another positive opportunity for their kids. Bachtold suggested the board further discuss the topic of wrestling during a committee meeting or the regularly scheduled monthly meeting in February. Next, we have the latest in the lawsuit against the PBL schools. Plaintiffs given until January 30th to respond to PBL School District's motion to dismiss. Judge sets hearing in civil case for Monday, February 23rd, via Zoom. Paxton. The attorney for five current and former Paxton Buckley Lotus students who claim in lawsuits filed last summer they were inappropriately touched by suspended teacher and former coach Rob Pacey, and that administrators did not properly address the alleged sexual misconduct, has been given until January 30th to file objections to the district's motion seeking the dismissal of claims that the district should be held vicariously viable. During a brief status hearing, held remotely via the Zoom app Friday morning, McLean County Judge Rebecca Foley, who is presiding over the civil cases, asked the five plaintiffs' attorney, Bahavni Ravindran of Chicago, if she planned to file objections to the December 12th partial motion to dismiss filed by the district's attorney, Michael Bersani of Itzhaka. Ravindran said she would be filing an objection and asked Foley to give her 2 weeks until Friday, January 30th, to file the response, even though Ravindran said it might be filed well before that date. Separately, Ravindran said she also plans to respond to affirmative defenses that were attached to answers to the lawsuits filed January 9th by Pacey's attorney, Emily Schnitt of Chicago. Bersani, who had no objections to the January 3rd deadline for Ravindran to file her objections, asked to be given until February 13th to file a reply. Foley set the deadlines as requested, and the next hearing set for 10:30 a.m. Monday, Friday 23rd, again via Zoom. To Depending on the outcome of the upcoming motion hearing, Foley told attorneys the setting of initial deadlines for the issuance of written discovery could follow. Ravindran told Foley that both she and the defendant's attorneys were working to get third-party subpoenas out soon if needed, but have not yet sent requests to each other for discovery. The lawsuits, which were filed in Ford County Circuit Court last summer and have since been consolidated into one case, allege that Pacey, a teacher and one-time coach at the PBL district, inappropriately touched female students during the course of his 17 years of employment and that administrators failed to properly investigate and address students' claims of misconduct, ignoring the district's own policies by never notifying the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services as required. Besides the school district, named as defendants are Pacey, who was suspended last spring from his position as a STEM and technology teacher at Clara Peterson Elementary School, plus PBL Junior High School Principal Josh Didier, and former superintendents Travis Dooley and Cliff McClure. In the lawsuits, the plaintiffs contend that the district should be held liable vicariously for Pacey's alleged sexual misconduct. In his partial motion to dismiss, Bersani disagreed, though arguing that the legal theory of respondeat superior, which holds that employers can be liable for their employees' action while acting within the scope of their employment, should not apply to the district in this case. Bersani's motion seeks the dismissal of the respondeat superior claims made against PBL. Under Illinois law, an employer is not vicariously liable for an employee's willful and wanton, intentional, or criminal acts if those acts occur outside the scope of employment, a memorandum attached to the motion said. The sexual misconduct of an employee serves only the employee's personal benefit or gain, and therefore is not and cannot be connected to his employment. Pacey has not been criminally charged and has denied any wrongdoing. He remains an elected Paxton alderman. When speaking of Paxton City Alderman, we go back to the front page from the Paxton City Council. City will pay $225,000 to owner of 102 under revised terms. Council approves changes to redevelopment agreement. Paxton. The Paxton City Council approved changes to a redevelopment agreement for a downtown property at 102 South Market Street on Tuesday, January 13th, requiring the city to reimburse $225,000 rather than the nearly $400,000 previously agreed upon to its owner for property improvements made. Known simply as the 102, the building at the southeast corner of Market and Pell Street underwent both interior and exterior renovations shortly before it was sold in June 2013 to Skaggs Properties LLC by the Gifford State Bank, which had acquired it a year earlier. A month after the sale, Skaggs Properties LLC, owned by Dr. Thomas Skaggs of Champaign, entered into a redevelopment agreement that required the city to reimburse the company about $250,000 for work completed on the building, which later became the site of the Harvest Ale House and is now the La Hacienda Cantina Mexican Restaurant. Due to cost overruns, the redevelopment agreement was amended for the first time in 2014 to raise the reimbursable amount to $382,931. It was then amended for a second time in May 2017 to ensure the company would be fully reimbursed before the city's tax increment financing district, established in 2012, expires in 2035. Under the second amended agreement, Skaggs was to receive 75% of the gross incremental real estate taxes generated through the property improvements through December 31, 2019, with the percentage being determined every 4 years after that date, based on the amount still owed to Skaggs compared with the years remaining in the TIF district's 23-year lifespan. All reimbursement was required to be made prior to the TIF district ending. However, as City Attorney Tony Shearing noted, the property's assessed value inexplicably did not go up, despite the hundreds of thousands of dollars put into its renovation, so there were no additional taxes generated as a result. They completed literally hundreds of thousands of dollars in improvements, and the assessed value went down, Shearing said. Now, I'm not an assessment expert, but that's now not how that works. If it had worked the way it was supposed to work, the assessed value would have gone up, and the agreement that we had, it would have paid out in a way that it was intended under the redevelopment agreement. Because we had several years where the assessment actually went down and then kind of stabilized at the pre-improvement levels, it was not generating any increment. And the way that the agreement was written, if it was not generating any increment, we were under no obligation to pay anything. I think the redeveloper understandably was a little upset by that, as I would be if I was in his shoes, and I think we all would be if we were in their shoes. The Ford County Supervisor of Assessments Office finally corrected the assessment issue 2 years ago, assigning the property a net taxable value of $110,760 for the 2024 tax year, up from just $17,450 for the year prior. That means it is now generating tax increment as originally intended, Shearing noted. Shearing said Skaggs would prefer, though, that the payment amounts not vary from year to year as they would have under the previous redevelopment agreement. The city would prefer the same, he noted, having fluctuating payment amounts would create potential instability in the TIF fund as well as making it next to impossible to budget. After some conversation with the developer, I think the developer wants some certainty as to payment amounts, which again is understandable, Shearing said. And in exchange for that, he is willing to basically lower the overall demand and fix the period of time to a point that is manageable from the city's perspective. The number goes down from $382,931 to $225,000. The new agreement calls for the full $225,000 reimbursement to be paid over 10 years, with 10% to be paid within 60 days, another 10% by the end of 2026, and then 10% each additional year, Shearing added. It's a fixed term, so that we know this is going to be over at some point and that he will be paid everything he's agreed to be paid, Shearing said. Ultimately, it's an unfortunate scenario that was created through no fault of ours or the developers, but it's one we have to right, and fortunately we have a developer who's being very reasonable in how we make that right. I think that's what this agreement reflects. The property tax bill for 2024, payable in 2025, totaled $10,008. The amended agreement was approved via a 7-0 vote, with Alderman Matt Greenberg absent, and Aldermen Eric Evans, Dean Geiken, Kristen Larson, Rob Pacey, Joe Reinhardt, Mike Wilson, and Justin Withers present. And a short item from the Melvin Village Board. Melvin ends invasive pet registration rule. Melvin. Upon the recommendation of Village President Amber Hoffman, Melvin's Village Board has done away with the practice of requiring residents to register their pets at Village Hall. In a news release following the board's January 13th monthly meeting, Hoffman called the practice invasive. All registration fees from 2025 and 2026 have been refunded, and the village will no longer participate in registering village pets, Hoffman said. The animal warden recommends ID tags in the event of animals find their way out of their fences so they can be returned. The policy will align better with the wants and needs of the village residents and eliminates at least one unnecessary government intervention. Now we'll turn to the obituaries in the Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday. It's January 21st. Wilma L. Rust, Cisna Park. Wilma L. Rust, 96, of Cisna Park, died Sunday, January 18th at her residence. Funeral services were held at 11 a.m. Friday, January 23rd at the Trinity Lutheran Church in Cisna Park with the Reverend Michael Rulig officiating. Burial followed in the Trinity Lutheran Cemetery near Cisna Park. Memorials may be made to Trinity Lutheran Church in Cisna Park, the Iroquois Memorial Hospice, or to an organization of the donor's choice. Barbara J. Barth, Easley, South Carolina. Barbara Joan Zander Barth, formerly of Paxton, Madison, Wisconsin, and Clemson, South Carolina, died Sunday, January 11th at her home. Per her wishes, there will be no services. Burial will be in Glen Cemetery in Paxton. Memorials may be made to Shriners Hospitals for Children in Greenville, South Carolina, or to the United Methodist Committee on Relief in Atlanta, Georgia. Marilyn J. Fields, Paxton. Marilyn Joyce Fields, 90, of Paxton, died at 11:07 a.m. Saturday, January 17th at Accolade Healthcare of Paxton Senior Living. Funeral services were held Thursday, January 22nd at the Paxton Church of Christ with the Reverend Kevin Heiser officiating. Burial followed in Glen Cemetery in Paxton. Memorials may be made to the Paxton Church of Christ. Russell J. Zick, Rochelle. Russell Jerome Zick, 72, of Rochelle, a former Paxton coach, died Tuesday, January 13th at his home, surrounded by family, after a six-year battle with cancer. Family will hold a celebration of his life at a later date. We return to the news with a follow-up story from the Gibson City Council. Feasibility study supports hotel build in Gibson City. News shared with the council by the Greater Gibson Area Economic Alliance. Gibson City. During the Gibson City Council's January 12th meeting, the Greater Gibson Area Economic Alliance's Executive Director, Matthew Burns, shared that the city was a good candidate for a new hotel according to the results of a hotel feasibility study initiated last year by the City Council and his organization. Burns told the council that he had received verbal confirmation on the outcome of the study, which determined that Gibson City could feasibly support a 50 to 55 room upper mid-scale hotel. Burns told the Ford County Chronicle last week that the completed study will include two separate pro forma scenarios, one directly with Cobblestone Hotels and the other a generic one for a different hotel brand such as Best Western. The study results will also include a full cost analysis for the project, which will help determine the amount of financial commitment needed to construct the facility. Burns said the next step will be assembling an investment group, which he anticipates will include local investors. It's important in a rural community such as Gibson City to have local investors funding the project, Burns said. Burns said an upper mid-scale hotel would have both immediate and long-term impacts on the community. Burns noted the hotel would provide lodging for visitors attending events in nearby Champaign, as well as those traveling to Gibson City and surrounding communities for local festivals and events such as Gibson Area Hospital's annual Summer Bash and the annual Harvest Fest. Presence of a hotel will allow our festivals and events to grow, Burns said. Burns added that the hotel would also support local economic development by providing accommodations for potential hires for business in the industrial park as well as for clients of Gibson Area Hospital. Burns said additional information will be shared with the council as it becomes available. The ongoing closure of the North Park's restroom facilities came up for discussion at the council's January 12th meeting. Dean Kidd, representing the Parks Committee that was formed during the Gibson City's mapping process, said he was concerned about the impact the closure had on the ACT Theater Company's activities at the park. Kidd, who also serves as president of the ACT Theater Company, said the lack of restroom facilities has impacted productions at the park. Kidd said the closure has been problematic because participants and guests attend the practices and performances and need to use the facilities. Superintendent of Streets and Alleys, Tyler Martin, told the council that city engineers have been consulted regarding the issue and that plans were underway to address the problems with the restroom facilities. Martin said a determination will be made in the coming months on whether the bathrooms will be remodeled or fully replaced. Kidd requested that the city keep him informed as progress is made. The council approved redevelopment agreements between the city and One Earth Sequestration LLC and One Earth Energy LLC to help support One Earth's construction of 8 additional lines of railroad track to accommodate 400 rail cars for transporting the ethanol produced at its plant in Gibson City. The eligible amount of reimbursement through the city's tax increment financing district number 4 for building the tracks is slightly over $4 million. One Earth Energy Chief Executive Officer and President Steve Kelly told the Ford County Chronicle that rail transportation is essential for the distributing the ethanol from the plant and much more efficient than using over-the-road trucks to deliver it. The new tracks, which are used by the Norfolk Southern Rail Lines, will help One Earth Energy expand the plant's output significantly, Kelly said. The redevelopment supports the purpose of the Gibson City's TIF plan and project incentives implemented to encourage economic growth and development. The council approved a $15,000 cost estimate from Lee Farms Excavating of Paxton for the demolition and cleanup of the David Jordan property, where the home burnt down last year in connection with Jordan's altercation with police officers and his subsequent disappearance. His whereabouts remain unknown. City officials expect the demolition and cleanup work to be done this week. We'll close on some crime news. A woman from Rankin jailed on delivery of meth charge. Pontiac. Tierra Kelly of Rankin was arrested for the manufacture and delivery of methamphetamine, more than 100 grams, a Class X felony, following an investigation into the delivery of methamphetamine by the Livingston County Sheriff's Office Proactive Unit, according to a news release from the Sheriff's Office. Kelly was arrested in Danville in Vermilion County and released to the custody of the Livingston County authorities. About 112 grams of methamphetamine were seized in Livingston County. And Scott P. Schreffer, 55, of Paxton, was arrested for 2 counts each of threatening a public official and disorderly conduct on Monday, January 12th. The arrest occurred around 7:33 p.m. in the 300 block of North Elm Street after police received 2 separate reports, first around 10:41 a.m., that a man later identified as Schreffer was standing in line at Casey's when he started making threats about killing a Paxton police officer and a Ford County law enforcement officer. Previously, Schreffler had been arrested for serious offenses in other jurisdictions in Illinois, including an arrest in Cook County in 2017 for aggravated battery to a police officer for allegedly punching a LaGrange police officer after he was pulled over for traffic violations, plus an arrest in 2016 in Kankakee County for aggravated unlawful use of a weapon for trying to enter the Bourbonnais police station with an automatic gun. And that's all the time we have for this week's reading of the Ford County Chronicle. Stay warm out there.